Okay. I think 3 minutes is plenty of time to deal with technical difficulties. I think who's here will likely be here. We won't do a roll call. I'll just kind of briefly explain the process that some of you guys have been to many of these, I'm sure, and probably could do a better job at facilitating the meeting than myself, but unfortunately you get me. So today is the time set aside for the oral proceeding for the rule making process regarding dental therapy. It is July 28, 2022. It is now 10:04 a.m. Oral proceeding can include any oral comments up until that can be written or oral between the time we post until the conclusion of today's meeting. So no more written responses to the oral proceeding will take place after today's meeting. We will set this aside. There, as you notice, there's no board members attending. Staff is present, and myself, Brian Edmondson. We have Christina Gomez and Yasmin Bustamante. We'll be recording. Yasmin already started the recording, but we'll also be notating in kind of a minute format what oral comments are made in addition to what we already received in written format and present those to a board meeting. I'm vague on the board meeting date because we don't yet know. It will not go to the August 5th board meeting. That agenda's already been set. They'll meet next Friday, but it won't be inclusive of this agenda topic. They have on their calendar tentatively a meeting scheduled for September 2nd, which is the Friday before Labor Day, which is why it's tentative, and then September 9th on the 5th, or somewhere between now and the 5th, we'll solidify that date, and hopefully we can be on this matter, will be on that agenda. If not, it would go to October 7th. So write the pencil of those dates down. We'll try to keep at least the attendees that are present today abreast of when this topic will come up. So if I can, I just want to briefly state, I'm not going to summarize anybody's oral comments because I think everybody that submitted a written comment, I think they're in attendance. So I won't summarize those. I'm just going to state who they're from. And then after that, we'll start with who I start with in the notification of who we received a written comment from. And if you want to summarize what you submitted, feel free. And then after those summaries take place, then we'll go to oral comments that were not submitted in writing. To answer Ms. Bellini's question earlier, there is not an official sign-in for this meeting, but what I would ask is you can leave your camera on or turn it off, however you want, but please leave your microphone on mute until called upon. We'll try to manage it the best we can. Christina, Yasmin, and myself will try to manage who speaks. When. So, and I'm assuming that nobody won the Mega Millions because you're all here. So, because this is so enriching and wise, there may be people that feel more enrichment in this than the riches of Mega Millions. So, let me start with introducing what oral comments the written comments that we have received. We received, and I'll call on people here in just a moment. We received written comments to the notice of proposed rulemaking from the Intertribal Association of Arizona, signed by Maria Dagger, and I believe it was submitted by Lita Montiel, who is here. We received from the Arizona Health Coalition, several comments. And are you, Ms. Bellini, you're here representing them, correct?
Hi, Ryan, this is Brianna Miller from the Arizona Oral Health Coalition. I'm the one who submitted the comments, but the comments were made by many other folks on this call. So I can, when it's my turn to talk, I can just kind of give an overview and then I'll leave it to my colleagues.
Okay. And Ryan, we are working with the Arizona Oral Health Coalition, but also representing the Pew Charitable Trust. And we did send comments to the board for the last board meeting. I didn't have new comments to send for this go round. I assumed that those comments would be part of this package, but I may be wrong.
We'll cover that in a little bit. I don't know if you've seen anything from here. Are you talking about the June board meeting or the last board meeting regarding that they discussed rules?
I'm talking about the last board meeting we discussed rules, which I think was February.
Yeah. I'll have to go back. Yasmin, maybe while I'm introducing the last one, maybe look and see. I recall getting comments, but not related, because it would have been a totally unrelated rule topic because we were only dealing with CE, continuing education, and some general changes to the rule. So I don't know that we would have needed an oral proceeding comment or written comments related to dental therapy at that time. So if we can't find it, Kristen, what we'll do is just have you resubmit specific for this and we'll save it for the packet. And I'm, my apologies, Brianna. I didn't know you were here. I was on a different screen, so my apologies for missing your entrance.
No worries.
And then the last comment, written comment, that's part of the oral proceeding today is by Dr. Scott Howell, who's also present. So with that, I'm going to mute myself and just right after I introduce our first speaker or set of speakers would be Alita Montiel and whoever is in attendance with her for the Arizona Tribal Association. And feel free to either just summarize what you submitted, because that's all we need, or you can read the letter. I don't think it's extremely long, but if it's a super long letter, when we get to those people, we'll ask you this. We will ask you to summarize that. So with that, let me introduce Ms. Montiel and your Arizona Tribal Association.
I'd like to say good morning. Good morning. Yay, we're here at this point in time. I'm Alida Montiel. I'm a member of the Pascua Yaqui tribe. I work at the Intertribal Association of Arizona. And it's amazingly for us a short one-page letter with not a lot of attachments. But I know we submitted those kinds of items for the board packets, the Rules Advisory Group and the board meeting packets in the past. So basically our letter is somewhat summarized in the Arizona Oral Health Coalition comments, and I didn't know you were going to call on me first, but may I just say that the Intertribal Association of Arizona is a tribal consortium of 21 of the 22 tribal nations in Arizona. And the member tribes of Intertribal Association of Arizona seek reconsideration by the Arizona State Board of Dental Examiners on a priority area of concern in the dental therapy rulemaking process. And that was initiated in 2020 for House Bill 2235, Dental Therapy Licensure Regulation, that passed unanimously by the Arizona State Legislature and was signed into law by Governor Ducey on May 16, 2018. So we request reconsideration of the language. We think it might be a part of a miscellaneous section, but we're not sure where exactly it may fit. But at that point in time, from what we saw how the rule was constructed, it appeared that in a prior meeting with some legal minds at the board and with assistance of Intertribal Association of Arizona's advisor, this is the language that we feel would really help the tribal nations and the Indian Health Service implement the dental therapy rule that's passed by the state of Arizona, but also is affiliated with a national law. And the language states, according to 25 USC, that's United States Code, 1616L, dental therapists may provide services in tribal and federal American Indian serving health care programs consistent with ARS 32-1276, and that is the dental therapy statute. So the background is that ITAA recommended the language in the rulemaking process that would aid tribal governments in Arizona implement dental therapy provisions pertaining to tribes, Indian Health Service, and urban Indian health programs contained in the statute. The Rules Advisory Group, however, did not concur with this request, and therefore such language is not included in the final proposed rule now before the full board. ITAA seeks your reconsideration of this language so it is clear to the 22 tribal nations in Arizona what elements of the rule apply to dental therapy services in tribal communities. And our next section is on justification. ITAA recommends this clarifying statement be added to the rule. While ARS 32-1231 of the Dental Therapy Statutes exempts dental therapists employed by IHS tribes and urban Indian dental clinics from state licensure, our clinics must comply with the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which is the statute I read a little bit earlier, 25 U.S.C. 1616L, and D is a specific section that authorized dental therapy services in the lower 48 states and conformed to the state's approved scope of practice. The recommended language is needed because the rule provides the level of detail that IHS and tribal governing boards and dental clinics would rely on as the standard for their clinical practice settings and protocols. That is why we feel it is very important to include this language, because it is the standard for which we should comply with. And there's some closing remarks. We're available to provide any additional needed information pertaining to dental therapy services in tribal communities. I have our contact of our executive director, Maria Dadgar, for the Intertribal Association of Arizona, and myself. So that is why we're seeking reconsideration of this refined language, may I tell you, with your advice of the consideration that your legal advisor had even provided at that point in time when we presented the language before the board in the public meeting, thought that it could be considered by the board. And so we ask that you include, according to 25 U.S.C. 1616L, dental therapists may provide services in tribal and federal American Indian serving healthcare programs consistent with ARS 32-1276. And the justification is because the rule provides the level of detail that IHS and tribal governing boards and dental clinics would rely on as the standard for their clinical practice settings and protocols. And that is our recommendation today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Montiel. We appreciate the comments and the summary of your concerns and desire to get the rule amended further to add in what it is that you're looking for. At the end, I'll explain, but briefly, there are no board member attendance today on purpose. We're just taking oral comments today. The full board will review this at a future meeting for those that missed that earlier comment. So I appreciate that. The next speaker, and I'll defer to how you guys want to present on the Arizona Oral Health Coalition. Brianna Miller, I believe, will start. And if Christine Bellini wants to add to that, or if there's no need, I'm fine with either one, but we'll move to that presenter now.
Sure, thanks, Ryan. Yes, I'll go ahead and speak, and then I think Kristen and Deb would also like to comment. So my name is Brianna Miller, and I'm the coordinator for the Arizona Oral Health Coalition, which is comprised of a dedicated group of oral health advocates and stakeholders from across the state. Our mission is to advocate for policies that see every Arizonan thrive by way of good oral health and access to culturally appropriate, comprehensive oral health care. The Arizona Oral Health Coalition looks forward to welcoming trained dental therapists to be licensed in Arizona, as dental therapists can play an integral role in addressing Arizona's longstanding oral health disparities. The coalition appreciates the work that has been done by the board and staff throughout the rulemaking process and now respectfully requests the inclusion of the recommended changes outlined in our formally submitted public comments. The coalition also welcomes the efforts by the board to move forward with the adoption of the notices of proposed rulemaking for submission to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. I have, like I mentioned, colleagues here with me today, Kristen Bellini and Deb Kappas, possibly Scott Howell as well, that wish to address some of the individual comments made within that document. I did also just want to reference the attachments to our comments, to our formal public comments that included a letter from A.T. Still University, another letter from Dr. Scott Howell, and a former letter from the Arizona Oral Health Coalition. These have been included in support of adding specific language regarding cultural competency and health disparities courses to the list of approved courses for continuing education for dental therapists and for all oral health providers. We recognize this issue has been discussed at length by the board in the past, and so we just continue to encourage the board to investigate the important nature of this material. And that that concludes my comments. I'll hand it over to for some more specific comments related to our letter. Thank you.
Okay, great. I will leave it up to Kristen Bellini and Deb Kappas. For the record, let me just clarify Deb Kappas's role, because Deb is highly active in the dental world in the state of Arizona. She wears many different hats. She wears two for the Arizona Board of Dental Examiners, one as an investigative committee member, and she's not here representing them. She also sat on the Rules Committee when we expanded the Rules Committee, and she's not here representing them either. So with that, I would introduce both Kristen Bellini and Deb Kappas, and I will let one or both of you reintroduce yourself at the appropriate time. Well, maybe since I'm speaking now, let's start with Kristen Bellini and then turn it over to Deb Kappas. And Kristen, if you can just keep your points just to the Arizona Oral Health Coalition, and then we'll cover Pew later.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate that. Kristen Bellini here on behalf of the Pew Charitable Trusts. We have been working closely with the Arizona Oral Health Coalition. So the comments that the Pew Charitable Trust has submitted are aligned with the Arizona Oral Health Coalition. I know that we've got members that are going to talk about a couple of the other pieces of the Oral Health Coalition proposed changes. So I wanted to hit the CODA accreditation requirement for licensure by credential. So the rules regarding licensure by credentials are unequally crafted for dental therapists. R4-11-206B5 requires dental therapists applying for licensure by credential to submit official transcripts to the board from a recognized dental therapy school as defined by ARS 32-1201, subparagraph 21, or an approved third party showing such a degree was conferred to the applicant. This condition is not a requirement for dentists or dental hygienists applying for licensure by credential, and therefore we believe it should not be required for dental therapists. We recommend that the language for the licensure by credential section for dental therapists mirror that of dentists and dental hygienists.
Okay, and is that what you intend to also send in an email? We spent a little bit of time and when people were speaking to try to find the written comment that you said you submitted, we
yes.
aren't able to find it in our folder. So if you can just resend that to me, we'll make certain that those written comments go to the board.
I absolutely will, Ryan. We do comment in that same letter, we do comment on the limitation on the number of dental therapists supervised under direct supervision, the cultural competency piece, and of course, inclusion of the reference to the Federal Indian Healthcare Improvement Act, which Alita already spoke about. So in an effort to not be redundant, you will see those in our written comments, but I'll let others speak to those individually. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take this lull as my opportunity to jump in here. I am Deb Kappas. I am here representing the Arizona Dental Hygienists Association as a member of the Arizona Oral Health Coalition. And so that's why our comments or our position on this is included in the Oral Health Coalition's comments. So I want to talk specifically about R411601 duties and qualifications that are listed for the dental therapist. Two provisions in that new rule, subsection B and subsection C, ask for additional conditions to be placed on scope, restrictions on scope of practice identified in statute, specifically the administration of nitrous oxide analgesia and performing suturing and suture removal. And the rule asks that before a dental therapist can perform those aspects of their scope, they have to provide the board with proof of competency, course completion, et cetera. This mirrors what is similar to, well, it mirrors pretty closely as to what is done for dental hygienists in with respect to local anesthesia administration and nitrous oxide analgesia as well. We believe that is not appropriate because in statute it specifically lays out that that will need to happen for dental hygienists to be able to do those procedures as part of their scope. The statute does not do that at all for dental therapists. There's no indication in statute at all that there would be limitations on the scope prior to any additional competency requirements except through the licensing process. So we think it's inappropriate to add those kinds of conditions in rule when it's not really set forth or clear at all or even hinted at in statute that there would be conditions or limits. We think that's an inappropriate way to handle it. If that should happen, it should be done in statute. But going further, I can just say that that's an additional regulatory burden that's really not necessary because any limitations on scope can be set forth in a collaborative practice agreement with the supervising dentist. If the supervising dentist or the dentist who's entering into that collaborative practice agreement finds that they are uncomfortable in any way with those procedures or any other procedures, quite frankly, or that they find that there's questionable competency in any area of the scope, that can be dealt with right in the collaborative practice agreement. And that's where restrictions or conditions on practice should be handled for the dental therapist. And then that concludes my comments.
Okay. Thank you so much. And yours are included in the email that we received from right now. Okay, great. So last one that we received pre-written comments is from Dr. Scott Powell, and then we'll open it up to Kevin Earle, and I'm not sure, Tanya Sanchez, I believe, also wants to speak as well. So we'll start with Dr. Scott Powell, and then those that are on deck will be Kevin Earle and Tanya Sanchez.
Thank you, Ryan. I don't have any additional comments beyond what I submitted already. I fully support the comments that have already been made by the other folks on the call here today. And I, from a personal perspective, having met with dental therapy educators, dental therapy students, dental therapists, I'm a big proponent of Arizona exploring all kinds of measures that can tackle the disease in Arizona, given that we rank higher than many other states in the country. There's no one solution, and I'm proud of Arizona for looking at other solutions that meet the unique needs of our communities. From the east to the west to the north to the south, we have so much variety that it's going to take a number of solutions. And any restrictions that go beyond the laws that are placed on dental therapy are going to make these solutions even more difficult to implement. So again, just supporting what's already been said, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. Thank you.
Great, thank you, Dr. Howe. And we have Dr. Howe's written comments. Kevin Earle has submitted his this morning. Keep in mind, they don't have to be written if we're gonna try to capture everything we can as the best we can, but if you can sum it up, written comment, it'll make it easier to distribute to the board. Thank you, Kevin. You're gonna have to unmute, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Ryan. Kevin Earle, former executive director of the Arizona Dental Association. I am engaged on a contract basis representing the Arizona Dental Association. I thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My initial comment is not included in our written comments, but I have to say I agree with Alita Montiel's testimony earlier regarding the legislative intent. Having been involved in the development of this legislation and intensively involved in this, that specific language and statute was really intended to allow tribes and urban Indian health facilities to be able to freely use dental therapists without restrictions. So I have to personally agree. I'm not sure that the association would necessarily agree, but I can say that that in the negotiations with this legislation that went on for several years, that was the intent of that language. So I'll leave that for your consideration. The comments that we have submitted relate to other parts of the reg, not specifically related to dental therapy. First of all, there's a number of elimination of certain definitions. I'm puzzled because I don't find that terminology anywhere in the regs, in the entire body of our regs. Terms like closed subgingival curettage and non-surgical periodontal treatment, you're removing those definitions, but there's no clear indication as to where that terminology does appear in the regs, or if it does appear somewhere else in the regs, there should be a language that would eliminate that terminology from the regulation. On R411201 under clinical examination requirements, we see extensive use of the word psychomotor. We were involved in legislation this year that specifically we discussed with the sponsor of the legislation, Senator Pace, that the term psychomotor would put it directly in conflict with other sections on universal recognition, which allows anyone who has taken any form of a clinical examination to be licensed here. Our discussions with the board at that time indicated that we were inviting a veto from the governor's office because you were putting a restriction on the type of clinical examination that could be used for licensure in other states. And so that language was rejected in the legislative session, but now it has reappeared extensively throughout the regs. And further, there's no definition of what that term means. So psychomotor, my understanding is that the board wants to see an examination where there's some testing of the use of their hand skills. That's all great, but there are significant developments in the development of of other types of examinations to qualify someone's clinical skills in order to obtain a license. So we have concerns over the use of that terminology. There is reference to the, there doesn't seem to be any reference under licensure requirements by credential of the successful completion of a jurisprudence examination, which I know there was an intention for the board to eliminate the JP exam. That was again rejected in the passage, I think it was SB 1240, I'm not sure what the number was. And then there's further representation about the payment of a fee for a jurisprudence examination. The legislation that was passed this past session eliminated the fee for jurisprudence examination, but did not eliminate the jurisprudence examination itself. And the association feels very strongly that any new licensee should be aware of the rules and regulations and the statute extensively before they commence practice here in Arizona. The other thing that we notice in Article 7 under dental assistance, I wanted to point out that the board published a substantive policy statement, number 27, earlier this year, that permits dental assistants to take digital impressions. These rules are now opened up. So I would strongly recommend the movement of that terminology into the regs to make it very clear in regs that dental assistants have the ability to take digital impressions. This has been a matter of some question and controversy. Not many people get into the substantive policy statements, but substantive policy statements are really an opportunity as a precursor to the development of regulations, so we strongly recommend the movement of that terminology back in there. Finally, under Article 15, Complaints Investigations, there are rules about when a licensee should be notified about about the complaint. What appears to be missing is some written notification when a complaint is being placed on a board agenda. Without that written notification requirement, someone who has a pending matter before the board will constantly have to monitor the board's agenda to see when it is placed on the agenda. Certainly, it would be appropriate to provide some notification by mail that someone has been placed on the agenda. There are separate requirements to notify someone when a matter has been tabled, but if they don't know that it's on there in the first place, how are they supposed to know that something's been tabled? There really should be some courtesy given to the applicants. Especially given the timeframes for the consideration of complaints, I know it has been substantially longer for complaints to be resolved before the board due to constraints imposed by budgetary and personnel issues. Certainly, it's a burden on a licensee who does have a complaint if they haven't been notified that the matter is on the agenda. Give them an opportunity to make sure that their legal counsel is available, and further to make themselves available for questions if the board has any at the time. So that's the summary of our comments at this point.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate that. I was going to get the comments. If I can, real quick, I just want to speak as the executive director of the board and not on behalf of the board regarding the final point on Article 15. This board, long before I was here, experienced a substantial growth in licensees in the state of Arizona. We're now almost at a 40% growth over like a 13, 14-year period, and the same budget was approved year after year, all the way through 2020. One of those years was affected, obviously, by COVID. We finally received a request of an increase in the 22 fiscal year, which just concluded June 30th, and now we're on the 23 fiscal year. So we're still looking to get staff, but we did get an increase in budget, but not an increase in a budget to spend it on staff. But in accordance to a separate statute that has nothing to do specific to dental, but just to the health profession in general, and I believe, and I don't quote me on this, but I think it's 323206, states that we're required to notify licensees when matters are on the agenda. So I don't know that it needs to go on the rule. That will be my recommendation to the board, that we're not going to add anything to the rule because there is a requirement. There is there was some miscommunication that was delivered, and you're probably speaking on that communication that was delivered about monitoring committee meeting agendas and whatnot. That's more for the complainant and not so much for the licensee, although it's probably a good idea for them to monitor as well. But there will be notifications sent to licensees when their matters not before the committee, because it's not required to go on the committee, but we will do that as well. There is a requirement that we do it for board meetings. So I'm not sure that the board will need to consider the final point, but we will still present it, and I'll get information on that at that time. So thank you for letting me comment. Before we move on to another speaker, I don't know if you want to comment now, because I commented on yours and I said I wasn't at the beginning. Okay, great. So I believe Tanya Sanchez, she's come in early on in the meeting, and I thought I read that she wanted to speak, and I may be misreading what I saw. So if Tanya's here and wishes to speak, we'll move to her. If not, what we'll do is open up to other people. So let me check with Tanya first, and then we'll move to other individuals that are present to provide oral comments. Tanya, so if you are trying to speak, we can't hear you, and you'll have to scroll down, and there's a microphone at the bottom. You'll unmute yourself.
Ryan, Tanya did put in chat that she is not interested in speaking at this time.
Okay, great. Thanks for pointing to that. So, thank you, Tanya, for being here. No need to communicate on her behalf. If there's anybody else here for any of the people that have already spoke and you want to just concur or any new comments, we'll take those now. Okay. I'm going to just reiterate that one last point about unmuting yourself at the bottom. And if anybody is here to either concur with somebody that's already presented, please scroll down to the microphone at the bottom, unmute yourself, and introduce yourself, and we'll take those comments. Awesome. So I'll take the as we've received all comments, and I believe I received Kristen Bellini's written comments as well as Kevin's. All of these comments, the only one additional comment that I think that is not in writing is what Kevin stated when he agreed with Alita Montiel in her written comments, that she auditorially stated as well. So we'll add that. Everything else looks to be in written format. We will present this to a future board meeting. I wish I could be more conclusive on when that meeting would be. For those that missed the earlier introduction, there was a conflict, believe it or not, with ASDA and their annual meeting in September. We had a meeting scheduled for September 9th, and it has a conflict with members that are planning on attending that conference. And so we were asked to move it, not by ASDA, but by the board. So we're looking at dates in September. It was going to be September 2nd and the 30th. There is now some push to go back to the 9th or the 2nd. And so we have, we're trying to work this out with the board members. Currently, we don't have a quorum for either the 2nd or the 9th. This should be solidified on August 5th, which is next Friday, when the board meets to discuss the September date. The October date was also removed. That will come back, and it's on the board's calendar now as October 7th. So at the very least, this will go to the October 7th. So the dates to pencil in would be September 2nd, September 9th, and October 7th. And then we've noted who's present today from the list of people that are here. I believe I have emails for everybody. Let me put in the comments my email. If you want to take down my email and then just send me something that you would like me to notify you when we're actually going to discuss this, we will make certain that we include you in notification of that meeting. So similarly, to follow along the lines of what Kevin was talking about notification. So my email is now in the chat. Please feel free to send me an email, and we will notify you of the future meeting when we'll have this discussion. Anybody else wish to comment? Do so now. Otherwise, Deb, please.
Sure. I just had a question on the timing. So if the board makes their final determination, about this oral proceedings, how soon would we expect the package to move on to GIRC?
So it's a great question. There's all kinds of things that can happen, especially if they amend Department 1. You have to re-notice the notice of rulemaking and other things like that. So it could be a bit of time. My hope was that we would be done and concluded with this process. It's been a long time, and it quite frankly should have started long before I joined the staff here, but we were hopeful it would be done by the end of December, and we have our first dental therapist employed in the state of Arizona. So it's hard to say. I don't really know that I can give an answer. But I would say if there wasn't a lot of changes or substantive changes, and that's the other thing is what is, mm-hmm. is substantive versus what isn't. And my definition of it may be different from the Secretary of State's office. So they may make a start over sort of where you have to go through the whole process from the beginning. It wouldn't be super layered because we've done a great deal of it already, but there could be that issue as well. So my hope is that any changes, even today, would likely be minor, and we can move forward. And so I would say by October, November. But
yeah. Good. And then would you be willing to notify us as to when that occurs, when you submit that to GIRC? Because sometimes it's hard to find that out.
Yeah, we can do that. I'm happy to listen to people. Some I do have emails, some I don't. Quite a few, in fact. The only one that I can look at right quickly is Daniel Preston.
I think if you were to send it to Brianna, that would be a good distribution point.
Okay, so we'll do our best to get that information out. And
I just put the coalition email in the chat for you, Ryan. That's where you can send it.
Okay. And then,
the same way.
Okay, perfect. And we'll do our best to get that notification out to you regarding GIRC as well. They have two meetings. They usually set one at the end of the month. It's called a study session. The one at the beginning of the month is the council. The study session is probably the one that you would want to attend more so than the council meeting, because the council meeting kind of formalizes what took place in the study session a week prior. So we'll do our best to send that notification. GIRC is not super quick at publishing their meeting dates or the meeting materials. Sometimes it's literally the day of the meeting, which is, I don't know how to get around open meeting law on that, but sometimes it's the day of or the day before. So it's a bit of a challenge even for us, but as soon as we can know, we'll get that information out.
Thank you. So is there any restriction to sharing that, sharing what you send to GIRC, you know, regardless of when they publish their meeting information? Is there any restriction that you can't share that, what you submit to GIRC with us?
No, I don't think so. I would have to check with who's not present today and not requested to be here today to really address that. But all of this is discussed in the public meeting, including the board's decisions on today's oral proceeding. So I would say because all of it's public, I doubt that any of it's confidential.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have my hand raised.
Yes, please.
Yes, Ryan, you've walked us through this process, and I appreciate it because we're tribal nations. We're normally accustomed to looking at the Federal Register and responding, or there'd be a tribal consultation notification from a federal agency. And so we're more or less accustomed to rulemaking with federal agencies. And so, but you've been helpful in walking us through this process. So I wanted to acknowledge that. So my question is, at the September 9th or 2nd, 9th or October 7th board meeting, what occurs after a public oral hearing like today? Will they review all of the comments, public comments and written comments? Will they take votes on the matters? Will they propose motions and vote on those motions?
It's a great comment. Raised by it a couple of times, just saying it was going before the board is a little big. But first of all, thank you for your public comments about my staff and myself getting information out. So thank you. To answer your question, yes, so it goes to the board. It's not as vague as going before the board. All of these comments the board will receive at a minimum 2 weeks prior to that, whatever date they'll meet, so the 2nd of September, the 9th of September, or the 7th of October. And then it would be highly advisable, which if our attorney doesn't speak up, which by the way, Kevin, we're receiving our fourth attorney since I've been here. He starts on the 5th. Sounds like a great guy. So, but either way, he may give advice. If he doesn't, my advice would be that the board take separate action on each separate comment, just to make it cleaner, because if they do one motion and they say we want to do A, B, E, and F, but we don't want to do C, D, and G through Z, it makes it super hard to capture what it is that they really want. So we will try to pin them down to get exactly what it is that they'll accept. And Jessica Thomas will be at that meeting to help in the process as well. So, in fact, my fingers are crossed that the board selects September 2nd, mostly because of the conflict from ASDA, that Jessica Thomas will be on vacation on the 9th, which will make it even more challenging for board staff to help in this process. So keep your fingers crossed or pray or whatever it is that we have it on September 2nd. Plus, it moves it along a little quicker. So I hope, does that answer your question, Alita?
Yes, and then at that time, do they also direct the process with the Governor's Regulatory Review Committee, Council? And is that when they give you your instructions on whether to move forward with GIRC?
Yeah, so what we go through the Arizona Secretary's final rulemaking. And then it goes to GIRC, and then GIRC formalizes the rule at that point. And then once that's done, then we have to go back to the Secretary of State, and then they publish it in their register. So not very many steps left, considering how far we've come.
All right.
Anybody else? Comments or questions? Dr. Howell, we're making it right under an hour. Awesome. Well, with that, I appreciate everybody's comments. I appreciate you being here. Thank you for taking your time. Good luck tomorrow on the Mega Millions. If I don't see you on the second, probably won't. If you did, I'll give you my address.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.